So namaste and welcome. It's good to see everyone that's here this day after Christmas. I hope everyone had a good Christmas celebration with their families and their friends. And we have three new sadhakas today. That's always wonderful. I'm glad that you're all here. I'm glad that you were able to fly in. It's very nice to see you. So we'll just go ahead and get started on the questions of the day. How can we help people heal? First of all, we can only give what we can give. So that's the first thing to know. Is this from Dr. Bardot? Well, you know about the body part of it. You cut that part down. But as far as helping people to heal, first of all, they have to want to get help. They have to want to come out of where they're at. This is very important. People want to help save the world. They want to heal the world. But if somebody is caught in their karmic things and they're not willing to let go of it, there's nothing you can do to help them. One of the hardest things is when we see people that are suffering and you want to jump in and you want to save them from themselves. But everyone has free will. They have a right to their suffering. Because unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, everyone is already a liberated being, but they don't know it. And their mind, of course, is very powerful. So what you put out there, you're going to keep creating. If your mind is chasing misery and it's chasing all of these, you know, dramas, you're going to keep creating more of the same. Until you're willing to finally stop and look at it and see it for what it is and then dismantle it and cut it at the roots so it no longer has any substance. So if you're wanting to help other people to heal, the best thing when you're beginning the path is just to be able to give them the breathing exercise to begin with. This can be taught. This can be given out to anyone. Because the one that I'm teaching you today, the Shanti mind breathing, it helps to bring people into focus. It will help to bring them into balance. It will help to keep them a little more relaxed. And it will start them on their way so that they can begin to see patterns emerging in their life. It takes one eventually to witness state to where you can kind of step back and see what's happening in your life without being so much embroiled in the action that you're not seeing what's going on. So this practice may be given out. If you want to help people heal, the other thing is to gain realization yourself. You can't drag somebody out of a pit if you're still in there yourself. So first climb out yourself, and then you have a ways and a means, you know the way out. And then you can aid others. This is one thing that I really hope with people that are coming, that they will go on forward to help society when they complete, when they reach realization, that they will take what they know and then help others to get out of the cycle of bondage and prisons that they've created for themselves. It's very important. Let's see. Swamiji, look at me. I have special problems. My baggage is so unique. What's wrong with this attitude? Oh, mercy. Well, everyone thinks that their own personal baggage is really unique. And everybody wants that attention, you know. I want to be the only one in the world. It's all about me. That's really a common attitude that people have. But this is one reason that I've set up the group forums the way that they are. That you have to be willing to be open and transparent. Because then people will see, and you will see, that your problems are not unique. The baggage that you have is not unique. Everyone has the same types of baggage. The main baggage is just that dynamic of me, 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 I. It's all about me. But no, you don't understand. I want, I desire, I need, I have to have. I don't want. Everyone wants to feel safe. So they create around themselves what they think is safe. But unfortunately, their safe creates a prison of their own making. And then when something comes in to break that sense of that safety, they start floundering and feel like they're drowning. Fear comes up at that point. But the only way to break out of that bondage is to finally confront it. And then once it's confronted and it's come full force and you've survived it, you find out it was not this big, horrible thing that I thought in the first place. So that's what this path is about. Coming to a point of confronting these things. Yes, everyone is special. Everyone's unique. In some ways. There are many different aspects of the Godhead. Krishna was unique in his way. Rama was unique in his way. Shiva's unique in his way. Kali's unique in her way. Each type of a personality is unique in its own way. But within that uniqueness is only one. That center point, which is unchanging, unmoving, pure, pristine as it is. So while the personality seems to be unique, the inner core is the same. Within all beings, there's only one absolute, only one essence. What causes this uniqueness is the conditions and conditionings of life, how this is grown. The pressure, like the pressure makes a diamond, each stone is unique in its own way. They're all diamonds, but they're all unique, and they're all the same. Same as they use that illustration about the gold jewelry. The essence is the same, it's all gold, but the way that it's formed and fashioned seems to be unique. Yes.
You were just talking about confronting the baggage or past.
Mm-hmm.
How exactly you confront? And what do you mean by confronting the baggage?
Okay. As you go along, you're going to start seeing different patterns coming up. So eventually you stop and you look at these things point blank. I'll give an illustration. If you come from a family that's told you you're stupid your whole life, what happens? Either you try to prove them wrong and do everything you can, take every course known to mankind and try to collect as many degrees as you can to prove it wrong. Either that or you do nothing and say, there's nothing I can do, I'm stupid. It's just the way it is. In either case, it's a bondage. Because really, it doesn't matter how many degrees you get, you still feel this inner lack. So eventually you come to the point where you see this is stemmed from this childhood thing, and you look at it and you confront it and say, am I really stupid? But you see eventually that this was the idea that you adopted that was told to you by somebody in a position of power, that somebody that you trusted, because you didn't know at that time. It was accepted out of ignorance, and it's run your whole life. So eventually you stop and you look at it and you find out, no, you're not stupid. But this idea of stupidity has been chasing you around for so many years. But when you finally stop and you look at it point blank and see where it's come from, you can see the fallacy of it, and then you can drop it. But if you continue just running from it, you never stop to really confront it and see really where has it come from.
Swamiji?
Yes.
Can you explain how witnessing as opposed to reacting, which leads to self-inquiry, fits in with this question?
As you start to do the practices, you'll be drawn into more of a witness state instead of a reactionary. When you're in a reactionary state, you're just going along and you're not really looking at the patterns. You're really not seeing what's coming up. But as you do the practices, you're drawn into this. You have kind of a buffer between you. You're seeing what's happening and you can comment on it at the same time. When this begins to take place, you feel almost schizophrenic in the beginning, because all of a sudden, I give the illustration, I was in India and was in this point of witness state, and I had taken a rickshaw somewhere, and the guy wanted to charge me like 10 times the price, and I went ballistic. I was screaming memes at the guy. And at the same time, I'm looking at it, watching myself going, now this is ridiculous. You know, here you are. It's not that you can't afford it, and you're sitting here screaming memes. How stupid is this? But of course, the action's still going on. I'm still screaming memes at the guy at the same time, okay? But this is witness state, where you can start to see the actions, and even while the body is going through it, there's still a sense of yourself that has stepped back and is now witnessing this. And eventually you'll start to come to, you'll see that everything revolves around this idea of me, my, I want, I desire, I need, I don't need. And from this, eventually it will start to trigger where you start going into a self-inquiry. What is this I that's holding this in place? Is this I, is it the mind? Am I the mind? Am I the body? Am I the emotions? What holds emotions in place? So you start to question on a very, very deep level. And that starts to cut the roots of these identifications. You find out if you watch the mind is comprised of what? Nothing but thoughts. Thoughts come and go. Where's the solidity of it? You think it's this big, solid, heavy thing. But if you really look at it, you find out it has no substance. So this is a process. You start this process. and the practice that you're given will help to take you to different layers of consciousness, will help to move you into witness, to help to take you to that point where a shift will happen, and then eventually you will start to question. Or you will see that things start falling away. They just simply fall away, and all of a sudden there is no self-identification there. So this is the import of taking Diksha and starting to have this path of Kundalini and this path of going through consciousness. Okay. Your question? Yes, go ahead.
I do not know which sadhaka asked this question, but I feel like asking a question that after having taken Diksha and started walking on the path, is it the sadhaka has to go on his own way, or is it also clubbed with the grace of the guru? And if it is the grace of guru can be different for different sadhakas? I mean, depending upon whatever, I don't know. Could you please explain that?
Yeah. Everyone has to do their own work. But yes, when you have taken Diksha, you have the grace of the guru as well. Grace is always available. The moment you start to surrender, the grace appears. The more you can let go, the more grace appears. Okay. The more you're under your own steam of I'm doing this and I'm going to make this happen, the more you separate yourself from grace. So while it's true that you need to put things in motion, also you cannot be attached as the doer. Okay? So when you're not attached as the doer, then grace appears. Okay? So yeah, it's the fine line. You can't just, you know, some people say, well, there's nothing to be done. But that's not true. Every guru will tell you, yes, that you need to put things in motion. Even Sri Ramana would tell you, you have to put things in motion, but not be attached as the doer. You're welcome. What is seva? In the abstract, and give practical examples. Okay. Seva. There's all types of seva. What I do is seva. I give seva to the world. It's just doing something, emotion or an action, geared towards something. Or you can give guru seva. You're helping the guru. You give whatever type of seva. It means basically that you're giving from the heart and you're doing something without looking for the external, you know, some external reward, whatever. You're doing seva. When you become a guru, you're giving seva to the world. When I've done, taken sannyas, also, again, it's a commitment to do so much seva. And, like, first comes my sadhakas. My family is second. First comes the path. When you take sannyas, your first priority is your path to reach realization. But you can give seva many ways. If your attitude is just that of giving seva, giving back to the world, your whole attitude towards your job will change. If you're doing it as seva, giving back to God, giving to guru, giving to world, you enter into a more expanded state of like a karma yoga, bhakti yoga. Okay. So karma and bhakti yoga combine and you do seva, action. Okay. Bhakti is of the heart, devotion. Karma yoga is doing something without having attachment to it. Seva is doing something for the world or for out of compassion or out of, you know, out of devotion. Seva.
Swamiji, with regards to the modern day fitness craze and the focus on physical health and well-being, to what extent does one take care of the body, and how is one to lose body identification?
They say the body is the temple of God. Okay, it's also the vehicle. You need to have the vehicle in order, in good shape, in order to go through and be able to do your practices. So if you keep those reminders, it's pretty clear cut how to take care of it. You know, if this is the temple that's housing the absolute, if this is the vehicle and the ways and means for you to use this for expression in this world, you want to, of course, take care of it as well as you can. But yet, realize also that it is only a vehicle and it is only a temple. It is not who and what you are. Okay. So people that are into this real phase of, you know, they've got to have, you know, women, I've got to have a breast job, or the men, you know, I've got to work out and gain all this muscles. What does that have to do with being fit or to be a temple? Nothing that has to do with identification of I am this form and people are judging me based upon this form. So we don't want to get into that. Of course, you're going to want to, if this is the temple and you go inside of the temple, you go within the heart, surrender within the heart to find that absolute. Of course, you want to keep it pure, in a sense. So it's best not to pollute the temple. But also, like I said, recognize that you are not the form. So it's, again, the balance, a balance. Some people, you know, get confused and say, well, it's the temple, so then I need to really, you know, work out. But then it becomes a sense of pride, and it becomes, at that point, when they have that pride of it, it becomes this identification with who and what they are. So just try to keep the balance, to know that, yeah, you need to have the vehicle while you're in this world. If it's in good functioning condition, then it's easier to do your practices. If you keep it in good repair, it's easier to do the practices. If you keep it in a sense of purity within this mindset that this is the temple of God, therefore I keep it pure, of course, that mindset is going to be much easier to go within and to access and to let go of the rest of the external world, to go within, find that still space within.
And that's how body identification is lost then.
The body identification, you question, what is this form? If you take away a finger, am I still who I am? If you take away an arm, are you still who you are? Question it. If you take away a leg, have you changed as an individual? Has anything changed? You're still who and what you are. So are you this body? You're not the body. The body's a vehicle. You drive a car, you keep your car clean, you keep your car in workable order, but are you your car? You get in and out of it. It's a vehicle, okay? If you go to a church, you go to a temple. You take care of the temple. You don't abuse it. You don't go in there and throw cigarettes on a temple floor. But are you confused? Are you the temple? Just because you take care of it doesn't mean that you're that. That you're the building. You walk in and out of it. Same thing. The spirit comes in and out of the body. It's there for a time. It has a function. But there's no reason to be attached to it. Although I see a lot of young guys that think they're their cars. I think most young guys go through that. And old men too, huh? I am my car. Bigger engine. I need more horsepower. More cc's of thrust. Yeah. How can we help people's physical pain? Physical pain also comes out of emotional pain. So that the more that they're on the path and they're doing the relaxed things, as you can see what's happened in the case of one of the people I'm working with that has been so addicted that they've been able to reduce their pain medication by already half within a week's time. And the pain is starting to leave the body. They have not had as much pain. So once they start, you start working with them. And if you get to a point where you're balanced in yourself, then you can start to do energy work and things with people. But I don't suggest people do that until they're really in a balanced state and until you're not taking on a lot when you can deal with that. But yeah, there is a point when you come, like I will do some energy work with people and it does help to mitigate things for them, pain and stuff. They do, at that point, start dropping the pain. So yeah, there are ways that you can do. I would give them some of the practices, like I said, the relaxed breathing, that can be done, and they can start to do some meditation as well. And once they start losing so much focus on the physical form, that pain will start to drop away as well. So more you're focusing on pain, what are you doing? You're putting energy into it, and they're sustaining it. So if they can get their focus elsewhere, it can start to help to relieve some of that pain and discomfort. Expectations. Would you like to elaborate on it a little bit more?
Well, that was my question, and in meditation it's coming up to just let go of all expectations. Mm-hmm. And as I let them go, I get into a little bit of that apathy that we were talking about and that you talked about with somebody's email where you said that apathy was the negative part.
Yeah, it feels really different when you start shifting into vairagya, where you're not so driven by desires. Same thing, expectations. If you don't have expectations and you're open to life, actually you'll have a much fuller life. It's when you have expectations that are not met that you go into a downward spiral. Like what happened with Yogendra. I went and was flying and stopped at the UK and said, I have time for darshan. He was having the expectation of getting in-person diksha, which is impossible in an airport. You see what diksha entailed. Impossible. So that expectation wasn't met. And then all of a sudden that, you know, expectation wasn't met, and he went in a downward spiral for a time. So, yeah, if you're open and you're not having expectations, then whatever comes is a surprise. And it's always much fuller. Or if you have an expectation that you're going to get on an airlines and for whatever reason you don't, at that time you can be very upset. But you usually find out when something like that happens and the universe closes a door for whatever reason, it's for a good reason in the end. Something else will come out of it that's better. So part of this path is learning to let go, of all these expectations and things.
Okay. Let go and go with the flow.
Let go and go with the flow, absolutely. You know, some people, you know, they come in and they think, well, if I do this practice, they have an expectation it needs to go like this. Or some people, Kundalini awakening, it has to go like this. And they have all these expectations. But everyone is unique. Not everyone experiences Kundalini in the same way. Some are more visual. Some have more feeling. Some have, you know, it goes more through consciousness than physical, feeling physicality of it. So if you come in with all these expectations, you're going to find out that your expectations are not met, because we don't get what we want, we get what we need in the universe. This is another point of surrender and working with Kali. Kali Ma gives us what we need, not always what we think we want. You know, we think that, oh no, this would be better for me, but you don't get that. Because it's really, in the ultimate end, it's not the best thing for you.
When desires are falling away, then it just seems like everything is so blah, where you look inside and you used to have a desire for this or for that, and now you don't. So what do? Just stay home and, you know, meditate 24 hours a day? Or
you could. You could. Yeah, it's a unusual adjustment to make. It's like people ask me, well, how come you don't just manifest money or you don't manifest? Because I don't have a desire. Yes, we need an ashram, but I don't have a burning desire to make it happen, to put it into place. I cannot manufacture a desire any longer. It's just not there. I say, yes, it would be good. We need to have this. It would be wonderful. But within myself, I cannot manufacture this feeling of lack or want, which is what it takes for a desire to be. For desire, there has to be feeling of lack or want, and I don't have that, so I can't manufacture it. So as you're going through this path and you're starting to enter into new states of conscious awareness, and one of them is this lack of driving desire, because what happens is you're starting to leave the world. Be in the world, but not of it. So you're no longer being driven like you were. And so that's tough. That's tough to start to come into that where you're not being so driven. But it takes just a relaxing into it, understanding This is why you have a guru, to understand what's going on, that you're just moving into this state of vairagya, of non-attachment. And when you don't understand it, you know, you can go into like the feeling of apathy at first, because you're not used to not being attached.
But if you hold out, something appears, which is evident to be the next thing to do. You don't have to manufacture, what should I do next, even though you don't have
desire.
No,
you just, it'll just flow.
Something will appear.
What needs to happen, happens. What needs to happen is going to happen. It's just going to shift into place. That's all. That's all. So yeah, when you're no longer being pushed and driven, it takes a while to settle into that. And people have also a wrong view about vairagya. They confuse it with pushing something away. Vairagya is just not being attached to it. Doesn't mean that when it's there, you don't enjoy it. You can enjoy it immensely. And when it's not there, okay, it's not there. You don't miss it. You don't long for it. You don't. So just enjoy what you have available at that moment in time. If it's being alone and just sitting there, just enjoy that being alone and sitting there. I can sit here and just look out the window and just be in communion with that tree there and just enjoy it immensely. Just feel it. And then just when there's no separation, there's just bliss that arises when something's not pushed away. But it doesn't mean that you need to fill the space with desires or aversions or whatever. That was the end of the questions. Do we have any other questions? Got one more question. Can I have your picture, please? Yeah, you can have a picture.
You.
You're quite welcome. Anyone can have any pictures that they want. We'll get some pictures and things. That's fine. So what we'll go ahead and do at this time, we're going to go ahead and then take a break. You may have some tea if you'd like. Take restroom time. And then we'll go ahead and have our meditation time. We'll have some time for meditation. Yeah? Yeah, that's fine. We'll have some time for meditation. And then the ones that the ones that have just taken Diksha, if you stay for a while, we'll work on doing the energy practice and the other things with you as well. So if we could do that, that would be great. Yes, hello. I'm blind now. It's the light.